Good morning. I'm more than anything just really glad to be here. That's the overwhelming feeling I'm having right now. It's a coming home in the truest sense, and it's so nice. My name is Joan, for those of you I don't know well, although I feel in sitting still like this, I know you somehow. There's something about the practice of Zazen and the jewel of Sangha in this way that it's so intimate that while I don't know your name and I don't know where you're from and your story, I know you. There's this intimacy that happens. And that's, you know, a little bit of what the Genjo Koan, I think, is speaking to as well. So I was thinking about Ango entry and in 1245, you know, Dogen's sort of words about this, and it starts with practice as if extinguishing a fire on the top of your head. And yesterday I had a fire on the top of my head. and it took a group of people to extinguish that fire. It's not an individual task. I became ill during the day. And as Jisei, I went to look for you here, but you're not here. As Jisei had shared, hydrate, please hydrate. I work as a nurse and I should know better. And I thought I was well hydrated, but I don't think I was. And I had a little heat stroke. And so I thought I could fight through it, but my Dharma brother and his Dharma wife, we had a little conversation and it sort of went, what would you say to someone else? I'd say, go to the hospital. And they were like, right. So why don't you go and do that? So again, the jewel of the Sangha. And I feel much better. Thank you. So I have moved just recently to Saugerties, New York, about an hour or so north of here, close to Woodstock, in a rental for a year. I had been living in Provincetown with my partner for the past 7 years. And it became very difficult to live there, as is the case for many of us in this economy and political sort of milieu that we're living in right now. It's tough. It's really, really tough. And living in a vacation-y resort town with two sort of separate seasons, one that is the year-rounders and one that is the summer visitors, is tough. So we made a decision to make that change and come back to New York State, and I couldn't be happier to be closer to my teachers and my community. So while I was there, I created a small sitting group at a place called Yoga East, and we dedicated ourselves to doing a Zazen Kai every other month with my Dharma brother again and his wife, Seijin, who many of you know, who had a Zendo in Hyannis, and Provincetown is about an hour away. And so we had these two small sanghas that together were a little bit of a larger sangha. And I have to sort of make a confession from my Catholic roots of why I did this. And it's because I'm lazy. I'm profoundly lazy. So I will not sit unless I have a reason to, unless you guys are going to be there. I have a home practice, and many of you practice at a distance, and I think you know the difficulty of that, to establish a home practice and feel really settled on your own. But if there's somebody else, you know, who I'm like, oh, well, somebody might show up tonight, you know, I better go put the cushions out, and oh, I should stop and get some flowers, and, you know, all the things that we do, you know, to make a space proper for sitting. So that's, you know, the main reason that I created the Little Cape Cod Sangha. I maybe there was some sort of you know, egoless reason, but more than that, I think it was like, I need this or I'm not gonna sit well. So even with the Sangha being created there, you know, and while it was small, it was strong, and it remains strong and will remain strong in my absence, I'm sure. Even with that, there was a feeling of disconnection, you know, that I wasn't with my family, that I was somehow at a distance, and, you know, that I was being forgotten, or, you know, it's a little scary to come back, like, will you remember me? I had shared with Roshi, you know, it's like, it's like coming home after college and your parents have turned your bedroom into like the media room or something. You're like, where's my bedroom? I fortunately have another teacher I work with, and fear not, Roshi knows about her, and that's my dog, Ruby. And so Ruby is a great teacher. You know, she teaches me, to don't get pulled and don't pull. You know, we walk at Ruby's pace, we try to do a little training in there too, but it's pretty much Ruby's pace. So we had left Provincetown for about a week. We'd made the first week and a half, 2 weeks, made the first move, and there was still a pile of crap that we needed to go back and pack up and get. So Ruby had been adjusting to our new home and finding new smells and new things there and sort of, okay, so I guess this is home. And then of course we put her in the car and we drive back to Provincetown to go get that last load of stuff. And we get there and she gets out of the car and of course needs to go to the bathroom. And she had to pee on everything, every single thing down the street, all the spots, not just a couple of the spots, all of her pee spots she had to get. And I was sort of, went, oh, you've missed your community and you need to say hello to everyone. You need to say, I'm here. And so fear not, I'm not going to do that today. I shall not pee in every corner of the temple, I promise. But that said, it's not so much a show of dominance or a show of marking territory as it was a sense of like, I'm here, everybody. You know, she was saying hi to all of her other dog friends in the neighborhood. We call it P-mail. She was leaving P-mails for everyone. So. And I could relate to her, sort of instinctual need to say, I'm here, I exist, I'm in this place. And yet, with years of practicing in the city regularly, coming to the Zendo almost daily there, that disconnection still exists. It still existed. And it begged the question, is the feeling, or I could be in the midst of the Sangha in New York and still feel disconnected is what I'm saying. So is disconnection, geographic? Where does it lie? It really made me ask that question, So was my living in Provincetown, a sense that I was disconnected physically. And of course, there's a truth, like the Genjo Koan beginning, there are Buddhas and there is enlightenment and there is delusion. There is a truth to the, there is living 7 hours away and there's not, So I'm glad that that part is out, but the disconnection is, right here. So I'm grateful to Jisen, to Roshi, and the Sangha in general for choosing the Genjo Koan, which I know Roshi loves, and I love it as well. And when I was Shuso, my study text was the Genjo Koan. So it's especially sweet for me. And it really is reminding us that it's right here. It's right in this moment. It's not over there or back there. It's not some romanticized idea of the past or some idealized idea of the future. It's right here. It's the sweat running down the small of your back. It's the pain in your knees. It's that fire on top of my head yesterday, as Jisei had shared. That sickness, that feeling sick, there's nothing like being ill to keep you right there, right in that moment. That's all there is that. I worked in hospice for a long time, and I think that that's, people say, oh, that's so difficult. And yet the patients overwhelmingly were so right there, right with their pain, right with their suffering, right with their loss. And there was something that was very stimulating to me to be in that environment. It was not unlike being in the Zendo. So a little over a month ago, we had our last Zazen Kai in Provincetown. It was a bittersweet moment. It was rough, and we had some folks come, and it was Fugan and Seijin and myself, and then after talk and lunch, often people will leave, and it was just Seijin and Fugan and myself sitting in the Provincetown Zendo. And it was actually, incredibly right, but again, I have to kind of get to my Catholic roots and confess. I don't know, it's just something about I have to do it. So I think I had ideas. No, I know I had ideas about what the Provincetown Zendo would look like. And I'll bolster them a little bit for your benefit. But it was like, yeah, you know, probably after a reasonable amount of time, 3 or 4 months, you know, 20 or 30 people will be coming regularly. They're all just going to fall in love with Zen practice. It's going to be like, where have you been? This is the best thing I've ever gotten. And I love it. And then I'm going to have to call Roshi and say, I don't know what we're going to do. We can't do the grail anymore. You know, people are coming up. They'll want to take Jukai. They're all ready. You know, it's going to be great. And, you know, obviously, I'm sharing this, you know, sort of comedically to, you know, sort of let you know what was kind of brewing in the back of my mind. But you know, it was more about the idea of that subtle sort of understory that we can have, even in the feeling of, well, I'm all right with whatever presents. Is there still some sort of meta story underneath? It's like, you know, but I want it to be something different than what it is. And so, you know, we really miss out on, you know, what is when we're fixated on what we think should be, you know, or I shall say I miss out what, you know, what is, I miss out on what is when I'm, you know, in my story about what I would like it to be. And there's a section of the Genjo Koan that I love, and I know Roshi has shared it before, and it's so beautiful. And it really speaks to this sort of disconnection, I think, that happens. And I like this cook version of it. I was looking at the Miyazumi version, and we say, carrying the self forward to confirm the myriad things. But Cook says, conveying the self to the myriad things to authenticate them is delusion. The myriad things advancing to authenticate the self is enlightenment. It is Buddhas who are greatly enlightened, who greatly enlighten delusion. It is ordinary beings who are greatly deluded within enlightenment. Moreover, there are those who are enlightened within enlightenment and those who are deluded within delusion. When Buddhas are truly Buddhas, there is no need for the self to understand that it is Buddha. Yet we are Buddhas, and we come to authenticate this Buddha. So, you know, when I'm going forward to say, the Zendo is going to look like this, you know, missing it. You know, when I allow the Zendo to come forth and say, what is this? You know, what is happening here? Then Buddhas are being Buddhas, you know, and there's, you know, enlightenment within enlightenment. We're all in that field of it. This morning as we're putting on kesa, you know, and for those who aren't wearing a rakusu or this, you know, this drag, I was thinking about, you know, drag dressed as a girl. It's really drab dressed as a Buddhist. You know, it's like drab dressed as a Buddhist. You know, and I remember thinking, oh, I'm missing. We're putting on this robe, vast as the robe of liberation. We're in the robe of liberation, all of us. We're all in it. And it's, you know, Bob Marley's, when the rain falls, it don't fall on one man's housetop. You know, it's here. We're all drenched in it. We're absolutely all drenched in it, regardless of what you're wearing. You know, it doesn't matter. So it's the pain in your legs. It's the sweat rolling down your back. It's this moment, you know, where the robe of liberation is, where you're enrobed in this. And there's another part. So after Dogen had said, you know, this whole thing about extinguishing a fire on your head, you know, this idea, my ideas for the Zendo at that time were, you know, another way. And then I let go of it. And he says, you know, don't regard this as going beyond, even if you see it as the beginning. Kick it away. Even if you see it as going beyond, stomp on it. Then you are not bound by beginning or going beyond. So it can get tricky. So I have an idea, then I let go of that idea, and then I'm self-congratulating myself for letting go of that idea. Let go of that too, and just be right here. And the practice of Sesshin is such the only place that I know of to practice that. We have the real opportunity, you know, to see what's going on. What's the story? What's the story we're telling ourselves? And what are we missing, you know, because of it? So I suppose when I really look at my ideas about, you know, what things were going to look like at the Provincetown Zen Center, you know, I think I honestly, you know, just wanted it to be a place where people would practice and that it would bring, you know, the relief that it had brought to me, to others. You know, I think it was a genuine sort of desire to do this. But on some level, there was that story that's like, look what this is and look what I've done. You know, some sort of ego attachment in that story, like, you know, look what this is, look what I've done. And it's very, very subtle. It's not an overt voice, but it's still going to dictate the course of events and it's going to take ownership, you know, of them. For any positive results, it will ultimately say it's the Buddha Dharma just unfolding if it's negative. You know, it won't take any, you know, sort of responsibility for that. But it's in that where that it lacks interconnectedness. We're disconnected. You know, we're 7 hours away from the truth. So the Sangha that, you know, Fugan and myself were serving on the Cape is really diverse. You know, it's much like our Sangha here. There's year-rounders, weekend visitors, tourists, artisan residents, all the flotsam and jetsam that you will have on the Cape. And we get to experience, you know, for better or worse, you know, the sort of coming and going of all of that. It, literally in tides, twice a day, you know, there's a tide coming in and there's a tide going out. And if you really sort of pay attention to that, you can feel it in your physical body. You know, it's like, oh, I can't say that. I know it's high tide. But you could feel that shift of coming and going. We often describe the Cape, you know, using our arm. So if someone is saying, you know, where are you? Oh, I'm in Hyannis. Oh, I'm in Provincetown, Orleans, you know, Dennis. People point to their arm because of the shape of the Cape to describe it. But it's almost like an Enso. There's this swirl of energy that will pull you in and spit you back out. So, you know, I think of Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz. People are always coming and going. And that was really, you know, how Provincetown is. And I believe, you know, will always be in that sort of community. And the precariousness of it is a beautiful thing. It's like, you know, you're a sandcastle right at the edge of the incoming tide. You know, you get to realize that it's just this. It's just this moment. So I really had to say, what is it that I'm here to offer? You know, what can I offer this community of sitters, you know, the five or six that come through? What is it that's here? And I think what I found, and I think it's true even in larger sanghas, is the only thing we can offer is zazen. The only thing that we have to really offer is the practice of seated mind and seeing what's actually going on. And in that, that's the anchor, you know, to always come back to. So, and it's really the only thing that needs to be offered. There were many periods, you know, where I was sitting by myself, or I was sitting with Patrick, or with Marilyn, or with Ram, or just one or two or three other people who were there. And to witness, to have someone witness you, your practice, and to witness their practice is a profound thing, this coming together in Sangha. And particularly when it's a very tiny Sangha, there's something really powerful, very deep about that. And it makes the treasure of Sangha very clear. And, you know, the encouragement to practice in a small group is strong. So in full disclosure, you know, as this last Zazen Kai and these last periods of sitting were coming together, you know, I sort of looked back and said, well, was this a success? You know, did I, did this benefit others? Did I miss the mark? You know, et cetera, et cetera. Where was I? And I'm going to bring up a story around this, you know, fear of maybe missing the mark, to just sort of point to, we don't know what we're doing. We don't know the impact we're making, you know, for someone when we're just in our practice, when we're just present. You know, we miss the ability to convey the Dharma if we have an idea about how we're going to convey the Dharma. So there was a woman who had come to our very last Wednesday night sit. And she'd called me saying, it's still going on, right? Or emailed me, still happening. It's Gail. You probably don't remember me. I sat with you about this time last year. And it tickled something sort of in the back of my brain, but I was like, oh, there's been quite a few people that would call and come for one period. You know, they practice in a Vipassana tradition and a Tibetan tradition. Is it okay that I come? Of course, you know, please come sit with us. So Gail said, I'd really like to come again. I said, sure. So she came in, and as soon as I saw her, I said, oh yeah, I remember her. You know, what a lovely woman. And I thought, oh, it's just going to be a couple of us. So I put out not all the cushions. I was a little lazy, as I had said earlier. I said, oh, I'll put out a cushion and a chair for Patrick, and I'll put out one for myself, and I'll put out one for this person, Gail. And then Karen came, another person who had come in the past. So I said, oh, this is great. So we're all sitting together, and as we would normally do, and we sat our periods, and then there's always a little Dharma discourse that happens in the parking lot. You know, people sort of talk and before they get into their cars and leave, and what about this and what about that? And so I see Gail doesn't have a car. She's on vacation. And the Zendo is actually a distance, not a far distance. It's walkable, but a little bit away from things. And she's a bit older. And, you know, I said, I'm happy to give you a ride. She said, oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. So she jumps into my car and we're driving along. And she says, I want to share with you something that I have recorded on my phone. I said, okay, sure. So she plays on her phone and it's me chanting the evening gatha. And it all kind of comes back, and I said, oh, I remember this. Last year, on a Wednesday night, I would chant the evening gatha at the end of sitting. And afterwards, she said, oh, I've never heard anything like this. Would you please record it on my phone? And I thought it was a little odd, but, you know, I said, sure, you know, I'm happy to do it. Do it in the tone, like, do the whole thing. Okay, you know, because I'm going to be like, life and death are of great importance. Time swiftly passes by. Opportunity is lost. And it's, no. You have to do it with the full thing. I said, okay. So I did the full thing for her. And we're driving along. I said, oh, you know, I guess this meant a lot to you. And she said, well, last year when I came, I got my sort of third and final diagnosis of cancer. I've had breast cancer. I had uterine. It's come back. It's come back in spades. I'm sort of surprised to be here now, you know, but here I am. And every night when I sit before I go to bed, I play this on my phone. And it's a powerful, you know, reminder. And also, it brings me great solace, you know. And I had no idea that I was making this impact. You know, my idea of impact was, we're going to have 20 people in here, and they're all going to be dressed in black, and they're all, you know. And here the impact was, you know, a completely unexpected, you know, way of the Dharma unfolding, an unexpected way to teach. So if we're caught in a story, even if the story is filled with good intentions for all beings, we actually miss serving any beings. So I've shared with the Cape Cod Sangha often, but maybe not here, where our little Zendo was, or where this yoga studio is that had a Zendo in exile in it. There's quite a few businesses. It's in a little strip. There's a caterer. We are directly next to Doggy Styles, which is a dog grooming place. And every Saturday was a big day to get your dog groomed. So I think it's a great place to practice moo, because right next door is... Who's a good girl? You know, like this whole sort of thing. Fugan can truly appreciate it. And those of you who've sat Zazen Kai there can know for sure. But as you drive in, there's a big sign for bait. And there's a, you know, bait and tackle shop. We live in a fishing community, so you can go purchase chum and other delightful dead things to you know, dangle out there. But I always thought, isn't this a wonderful thing that one of the last signs you see going in is bait? So, you know, are you going to take it? Are you going to chomp down on that bait? Or are you just going to say, that's okay, you know? And that sort of leads into a koan that I think is great. And I think it sort of points to, you know, the bait is there. It's not such a bad thing, you know? If you chomp down on it, just come back, come back, come back. Realize you've got a mouthful of, you know, fish guts, and come back. So Sangchang asks Zhuifeng, "The golden fish that passed through the net, what does it use for food?" And Zhuifeng said, "When you come out of the net, I'll let you know." So Sangcheng said, "The teacher of 1,500 people, yet you don't even know a saying." And Zhuifeng said, "My tasks as abbot are many." So, you know, I think of Rosalind Russell and the great quote, you know, "Life is a banquet, but most poor suckers are starving," you know. So where's the net? Where do you get caught? You know, I get caught in stories about how things should be, you know, or how things ought to have been, or how things will be in the future, you know. But when you're really, truly present to things just as they are, the exquisite heat of yesterday, the coolness of this morning, you know, when you're really just present to that, you know, there's no net. And the buffet is open, you know. You can have all of it. So when we realize that there's, it's when we're caught in ideas of how things should be, you know, that I get lost at least, you know, that there was a cool Sunday morning and that there's, you know, birds have sort of quieted down. It might just be the fan. So there's the sound of the fan, you know, then I'm present. And we miss the Dharma for an idea of the Dharma. So when our little Zendo started, those little stores were there. The bait shop was definitely there. Doggy Styles was there. There was a horse stable at the sort of other end of it. And in the time we were there, community housing has, you know, popped up around us. So at first I had ideas about it. The dunes are gone. The beautiful dunes are gone. They're, the first day we sat, a turkey actually came into the physical Zendo, stood, you know, at the door of the Zendo and then turned around and went out. And we saw foxes and coyotes and now they're tearing up the dunes. But the reality is there's such a lack of housing for people without large incomes there to live year round. And so my story had to change a little and say, you know what, these houses are beautiful. They're allowing people to live in this community, to work in this community. So in came a new road, and we used to be on Race Point Road. So Race Point Road, you know, and there were races on Race Point Road, and people tear down it. If we're sitting there, you can hear them, got to get to the beach really fast, got to run there, and, you know, it's an access road to the beaches. And they're zipping by with blaring music to go have their day at the beach. But then, because of the stable that was there, a new road came in called Stable Path. So when you're doing Kinhin and you look out the window, there's the sign, Stable Path. And I just thought it was somehow appropriate. And that's really where our practice resides, you know, right on the corner of Race Point and Stable Path. So there is a poem that Dogen had written while he was in residence in a temple in Fukakusa. And I think it speaks to the Genjo Koan and this idea of coming back again. This is the sign for again. Coming back again and again and again. So I will share it with you. Drifting pitifully in the whirlwind of birth and death, as if wandering in a dream, in the midst of illusion, I awaken to the true path. There is one more matter I must not neglect, but I need not bother now. As I listen to the sound of the evening rain falling on the roof of my temple retreat in the deep grass of Fukakusa. I'll read it one more time and I might make some changes and some literary editing. Drifting pitifully in the whirlwind of birth and death, as if wandering in a dream, in the midst of illusion, I awaken to the true path. There is one more matter I must not neglect, but I need not bother now. As I listen to the birds and the cicadas through the windows of my temple retreat in the deep green of Cornwall.